Okay, this is Dr. Shiva Amidya. I've just discovered this on YouTube. It's How Britain Engineered Pearl Harbor. So I'm just going to let it play through, I think. I haven't listened to it yet. I need to run to the loo before it starts, so I'm just going to let it play through.
Good evening. It's Dr. Shiva. I want to today take on the occasion of Pearl Harbor, when Pearl Harbor was bombed on December 7th, 1941, many years ago today, to take the occasion to do a systems analysis for all of you to understand how Britain, the British crown and the British elites were the ones who engineered Pearl Harbor and the subsequent entry of the United States into World War II. One thing everyone must understand is Americans, by and large, after World War I, were non-interventionists. The American people did not want to enter any more wars. So it was a significant amount of effort that needed to take to bring Americans into wanting to participate in World War II. So what we're going to cover today is, first, we're going to look at, I just quickly cover, Britain's entry into World War II, which occurred in 1939. Then we're going to go on to look at the efforts particularly Churchill was doing to somehow figure out how much he was wooing Franklin Delano Roosevelt to enter World War II and the American public, and it frankly wasn't really working. And then we're going to go to see how the particular relationship of Dean Acheson, who was FDR's Undersecretary of State or Assistant Secretary of State, who essentially did something that was specific to really piss off Japan to want to attack Pearl Harbor on about the same time as Churchill was trying to woo FDR to do it, but FDR really didn't have a reason. And then we're going to talk about, and we're going to summarize that to really understand that when you really look at the phenomenon of World War II, it is not that it shows against the common thread of how the British crown, again, we're not talking about the British people. We're not talking about, the businesses in Britain. We're talking about the elites in Britain who cannot fathom any other power that challenges them. If you look a few videos ago, we talked about how Cecil Rhodes and Britain are the ones who engineered the entry into World War I, how they could not stand the fact that an independent country like Germany was coming up, and they laid out the conditions, waiting for a spark so they could justify the entry. And in this case, Britain severely needed the United States to enter the World War II, and they engineered those conditions. So the key takeaway I want everyone to understand is that those in power use war as an instrument of politics. It's another means of politics. I think Clausewitz said that, right? War is another means of politics. So I want everyone to walk through this. We're going to keep it really brief, but you're going to walk away with some good history. So first of all, welcome to everyone. And by the way, before we begin, I want to let everyone know that our movement for truth, freedom, and health is recognizing that an election is coming up in 2022. And I've announced that I will be doing a run for governor, but in a very different way. We recognize that the elections are selections, and we'll be announcing shortly how all of you can participate, even in the midst of this, to recognize that we have come up with a way for all of you all over the country to participate by ensuring that we go back to hand-counted paper ballots. And we have a methodology that we've created for that. But we're going to see a lot of our Truth, Freedom, and Health Warrior scholars all over the country having the opportunity to run, not to win on their terms, but to win on our terms to build the movement. It is only a movement that is really going to secure freedom, that's going to secure truth, and it's going to secure health. It's not going to be from these freaking politicians, because the elections are selections. Anyway, I'll come back to that. But let's talk a little bit about Pearl Harbor. Let me first bring up this one picture. Some of you may have seen this elsewhere, but this gives you an understanding of, let me bring this up. Here we go. Okay. So if you look at this headline right here, which I'm bringing up here, you'll see that Britain at war with Germany, right? So Britain enters a war with Germany. This is, if you look at this right here, this is September 3rd, 1939. Okay. And so Britain was involved with the war with Germany. And remember, Britain had really, World War One, as we've talked about, was devastating to Germany. As you look at the previous video, we talked about how Cecil Rhodes, the group, as they were called, the elites of Germany, of Britain, thought they were the only powers that should exist, the British Empire. So as Germany was coming up, and as Kaiser Wilhelm II was coming up, we talked about this starting in late 1890, all the way leading up to early 1900, Britain was putting out massive amounts of propaganda among the British citizens that Kaiser Wilhelm II was this evil guy. And in order to justify Britain's entry into World War One, and they engineered, as a lot of the data is starting to show, the conditions so they could justify their entry and to go beat the hell out of Germany. And they did destroy Germany to such a point that it led to the rise of Hitler. And Hitler was, again, there's a whole dynamics here, but Hitler was leveraged what occurred in World War One to initiate a war with Britain and forcing Britain to enter that. So the bottom line is that Britain was at war with Germany starting in 1939. Okay. Britain needed allies. So they wanted the United States to participate in their war. Okay. And guess what? The United States public, as I mentioned, did not want to participate in any more wars. World War One was devastating. If many of you go back to your history books, the people in the United States were into isolationism. They no longer wanted to participate in any more wars. So for Britain to get the American public into World War II would require some serious manipulation, some serious engineering. And there's a interesting article that you can find that was written by an author. Let me bring it up. And you can find this online. But what was happening was that it was, when you really unravel this, it was really oil that led to Pearl Harbor. And we'll talk about it. And the events that were going on was, let me go to this article right here and I'll bring this up, the important points here, okay? In that summer of 1941, Roosevelt and his trusted advisor, like right where you can see here, Harry Hopkins, and the U.S. Under Secretary of State Sumner Welles were attending the shipboard conference off Newfoundland, and the Secretary of State Cordell Hull was on vacation at Greenbrier in Virginia. And he had the authority to grant licenses to export and pay for oil and other goods, was in the hands of a three-person interagency committee, and it was dominated by Assistant Secretary of State Dean Acheson. So let me just unpack this. So what's going on was every 6 months up until this point in the summer of 1941, the United States would give a waiver for Japan to buy oil from the United States. Okay, let me repeat that again. Every 6 months, there would be a check to see if it was okay to sell oil to Japan. So that waiver was pretty much rubber stamped approved by the Secretary of State by the name of Cordell Hull. So Cordell Hull, you know, they would look at the situation. Okay, they'd say, great, we're going to give Japan oil. So Japan was highly reliant on those waivers from the United States to get oil. And Cordell Hull was doing this on a normal basis. However, in the summer of 1941, what was occurring was that up until that point, from 39 to that point, those 2 years, Churchill was trying to woo America to participate in the war. And that summer of 41, as this article says right here, Roosevelt was attending, we go back to this article here, was attending, this is the right one, yeah, was attending a conference, that was called a shipboard conference off Newfoundland and with Sumner Wells. Well, guess who was at this conference? So that, let me go to the next article. So at that time, Mr. Churchill was also at this conference. All right, let me bring that up. So Churchill was also at this conference. All right, here we go. So so Churchill was at this conference. Let me bring here conference. So in early August of 41, right here, the two leaders of the English-speaking people met at a shipboard conference off the coast of Canada, Newfoundland. Churchill thought they had developed a strong relationship, and they had, but not as strong as Churchill hoped. FDR was much shrewder of the two about personal relation with other leaders. Some would say the American was at times deceptive about his intentions. Pearl Harbor rendered all of that irrelevant. Okay, it united Americans behind the idea of a total war in a way that a lesser attack would not have done. So here is Churchill meeting at the shipboard conference in August of 1941 with FDR, trying to get him to participate in World War II. Okay, but guess what? FDR wasn't, I guess, being convinced. Okay. At the same time, you know, the running of the affairs of state is left to this guy, Dean Acheson. Okay. So Cordell Hull, the Secretary of State, is on vacation. He's out of the picture. Interesting enough. Why did he go on vacation? He was always allowing Japan to get these oil waivers. He's out of the picture. Roosevelt is over here with Churchill. Roosevelt can't enter World War II because the American public does not want to enter World War II. And if you read this article, it talks about how the level of wooing, okay, if that's the right word, that FDR was doing. And the article talks about, let me bring it up here. Let me see this here. Sorry about this. The stage was set for Churchill to woo the U.S. nation. In December, he and his military chiefs sailed to America to hammer out the strategy that would follow in the incoming struggle. I think it's here. Hold on. The article really talks about the incredible amount of, here it is, okay? Britain was treated like, literally, as historian Max Hastings said, when Ambassador Winhead first arrived to make his post, he was met by a special train and whisked to Windsor. So there, George VI himself was waiting at the station to drive the ambassador in his own car. Never in history had a foreign diplomat been received with such ceremony. So what was happening was the British crown, the king, and Churchill were really wooing the U.S. ambassadors, treating them like royalty. Okay, it wasn't working. So while Cordell Hull is out of the picture, the actual secretary, the Secretary of State, at this shipboard conference, the escalation of this wooing takes place between Churchill and Roosevelt. But Roosevelt didn't have a good enough reason. But guess what happens? While that shipboard conference is taking place around the same period, Dean Acheson, who later on ended up working with Kennedy and Truman, et cetera. It's a whole article or a whole discussion we could do on Dean Acheson. He stops the waiver of oil to Japan. Now, this was essentially going to suffocate Japan. Japan was already being hit with various types of embargo. And this was essentially the spark for Japan to say, screw it. And within Japan, the militancy was also growing because Japan was being choked by all sides, by Britain, forcing the U.S. to also cut off certain assets. But Dean Acheson's denying Japan oil was essentially saying we're gonna destroy the Japanese people. That led to Japan attacking Pearl Harbor. All right. So just understand this. Churchill needed the United States to get into war. The American people did not want to enter war. He's at this conference with Roosevelt trying to get him into the war. He really doesn't have a reason. And boom, he gets a reason because Dean Acheson cuts off oil to Japan. The people of Japan essentially are going to be choked. They attack Pearl Harbor to try to get oil. And more than that, they're also very, very upset. And as you know, Pearl Harbor is the closest to Japan, to Japan's coast. So that's what happened. And so the real takeaway is that when the elites decide to manipulate public opinion, they will do whatever it takes. So the outstanding question, and this is probably for further research, is, and some historians have argued this, that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, just needed a good reason. So he got Cordell Hull out of the way. He had Acheson's there. He goes to the shipboard conference, and probably, more than likely, there was some communication. It's not like Acheson did this on his own. That's what the front page story is. But the reality is Acheson was probably, inspired or incited to do this. And that resulted in Acheson doing something which would have essentially really pissed off the Japanese, which is to cut off their oil. And as you can see here, that and this was, by the way, front page story of the time. And, you know, unfortunately, this is no longer taught in any of the history classes, but this was undeniably front page news. As you can see, here's the front page news. President cuts off oil to Japan, freezes all silk stocks, and that's August of, summer of 1941. Okay, so this was being reported throughout the news that, you know, we were planning on doing this, that Churchill, wanted to woo the United States. Now, let me read this last piece, and this will sort of make it clear to you how much England wanted the United States in World War II. Let me bring up this final piece. And it really shares, this article really shares an interesting, I don't know how I get rid of this stupid thing here. John, do you? Let me go here. Yeah, here we go. Okay. It says, to Winston Churchill, the Japanese attack on the United States naval force at Pearl Harbor was one of the greatest days of the most terrible war in Britain's history. He was appalled, calculating, and exhilarated, perhaps in equal measures. He was dining at the Chequers, the country retreat of prime ministers, when he heard the news. His guests were U.S. Ambassadors Gil Winant and Averill Harriman, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's special envoy to Europe. A butler brought in a portable radio for the party to listen to the BBC home service. When the attack, Pearl Harbor, was confirmed, Churchill leapt to his feet and said, "We must declare war on Japan." Said he must declare, which means Roosevelt. His guests dissuaded him from this impetuous act. Historian Walter Reed recounts in Churchill 1940 to 1945 his book about wartime relations among the Allied leaders. The prime minister phoned Roosevelt and asked, "Mr. President, what's this about Japan?" FDR responded that it was true and they were all in the same boat now. Okay? And let me finish this. This statement's very interesting. This is what Churchill wrote. Being saturated and satiated with emotion and sensation, I went to bed and slept the sleep of the saved and thankful. He wrote in his own history of World War II. Let me read that again. Being saturated and satiated with emotion and sensation, I went to bed and slept the sleep of the saved and thankful. So there you go. Okay. So let me just actually make this a little bigger. Okay. If you can see it again, some of you probably weren't able to see that. Let me go back to this. Okay. There it is again. This is what Churchill said. Being saturated and satiated with emotion and sensation, Churchill said, "I went to bed and slept the sleep of the saved and thankful." So it was extremely important for Britain once again to start wars with other people, divide and rule the world, and one thug against another thug. But this is how they got America involved. And if you really look back at it, who really profited from this? Eventually, you'll realize that the British Empire and the British Crown truly prospered from World War II. Okay, France and Germany after that created a pact. They realized they'd also been used on either side, and that they would never ever fight again. So that's what I want you guys to know, that when you take the systems approach, you realize that imperialists thrive on war and division. And that brings us to today. When you look at what's going on in the United States right now, you can again trace it, as I've stated before, it is once again neocolonialism back in action. It is the British Crown, which has amassed massive amounts of fortune in all their bank accounts, that they want to destroy the Bill of Rights in this country. There is a reason that Harry is over here. There's a reason that Meghan Markle is here. It's not like they're fighting, but they do not want the American working class to have the First Amendment and the Second Amendment. And what we're seeing is neocolonialism version 2.0. And there's a reason that the domestic censorship infrastructure now has been implemented in the United States. It's no surprise that the architects of that were the Atlantic Council out of Britain and at Harvard. It's open in the books right out of the Belfer School. The Long Fuse report talks about this. And in fact, Prince Harry is now a commissioner at the Aspen Institute of Disinformation and Information, and he's openly talking about why the First Amendment is bonkers. Okay? So we're literally going in full cycle, and the goal is for the elites to once again take back any sense of the First Amendment and Second Amendment that was given. And what we're witnessing right now is the attack on the working people worldwide, but particularly the working people in this country. We have the destruction of the First Amendment. We don't really have science anymore. And what you realize is the expansion of Big Pharma. And Big Pharma, frankly, is racist because they don't really want to support indigenous medicines. And we'll talk more about this in a piece that I'll do. And the only way forward is for us to build a movement for truth, freedom, and health. Our running, and it's going to be our running in 2022. We know elections are selections, but we know that working people must unite beyond left and right. And we must fight for truth, freedom, and health. And I'll come back shortly. I just want John to play our video, which
All right, that was Dr. Shiva Ayadure, I think his name is, who's an interesting guy I've just discovered. Welcome, Chris, and hello to Crazy Lady. Yeah, it's a late night one for me. I'm doing a slightly different routine than during the week. I'm on my phone, which means that I can just play stuff from YouTube. So I'm just going to play videos. Or if you want to jump on and have a chat, either of you. I know Crazy Lady's shopping, but Chris, if you want to jump on, you're welcome. Because all I'm really doing is playing. I'm going to play another Shiva Ayadure video, I think, because I'm interested in him. He's got some interesting things going on.
Hello, everyone. John, did you start Instagram?
No, I'm not.
Okay, hello, everyone. This is Dr. Okay, 1 second, everyone. We're waiting for John to start. I'll do unmute. Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Welcome. Today, we're going to have a discussion here about, it's going to be a pedantic lecture somewhat, basically an instructional lecture, about why the three reasons we need to de-brainwash yourself from the not-so-obvious establishment. That's what we're going to talk about. So we're going to have three reasons why you need to de-brainwash yourself from the not-so-obvious establishment. John, are we okay on Instagram?
Yep.
Okay, so we're okay on Instagram. We're on YouTube, Facebook, et cetera. So we'll wait for a couple of people to join. But welcome again. Yesterday, we did a 2-hour call-in show, and we'll probably have people call in if they want to today. And we're going to talk about what is the not-so-obvious establishment, and why is it that our movement for truth, freedom, and health is has been consistent in being extremely critical, be it of the wings of the establishment. So let me explain that. One of the things we have is that if you look at the history of the videos we've done, I think I've done close to about 1,500 videos. One of the consistent things across those videos has been to educate you on why we need to take a systems approach. Now, what is a systems approach? A systems approach is seeing the whole, not just the pieces. And the science of systems is what the elites learn. If you look at all the prime ministers, if you look at all the presidents, if you look at all the leaders of many of these countries, leaders come and go. But if you notice, they have certain advisors who are always there, be it Kissinger, be it Zbigniew Brzezinski, or whoever the hell it is. Many of them are in the backstage. They typically are educated at some of the elite institutions, but they understand the science of systems. And using the science of systems, they're able to understand not only the interconnection between the parts, but they're able to see the whole picture. More importantly, they actually engineer the whole picture. And this is why working people are in the condition they are today, because without understanding the science of systems, we're always begging to these quote unquote leaders. More importantly, what's important to understand that we teach in our movement is that when you come to the consciousness where you realize that both wings of the establishment are full of shit, that's a technical term, and you recognize that the only way out of it is that we have to build a bottoms-up militant movement of working people. When you come to that consciousness, that's when it's game, set, over. But in order to get to that state of consciousness, one of the important things is to understand the not-so-obvious establishment. So let me explain that. Those in power are very clever. They have the official outward establishment. So if you think about a bird, and I've drawn this before in one of my earlier videos, if you think about the head of the bird is the unified establishment. But the bird has the two outward shoulders, you know, the left and the right. So in the United States, for example, the left establishment is represented by the likes of the Clintons or the Obamas, okay, or the Bidens. And the right establishment is represented by the likes of, you know, the McConnells, right, or the McCains, right, or the Romneys. But remember, a bird just doesn't have a shoulder and a head. It also has these wings. And the wings have to flap to keep the theater going. And the establishment, in their intelligence and their understanding of systems, they have created their own controlled opposition, what I call the not-so-obvious establishment. And the not-so-obvious establishment has a left wing and a right wing. So on the left, which has existed for a significant amount of time, you have had people like Bernie Sanders or Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or, you know, AOC, etc. On the right, you've had the people who talk a good game, like Ted Cruz or, as I've talked about, Donald Trump, okay? And some of these people are recruited consciously or unconsciously. And you can't really, it's not a personal issue. You know, I've met with Trump. I like him. He likes me. And all that's fine. But still, he's a wing of the not-so-obvious establishment. In the medical freedom movement, they have the scumbag, which is a technical term I used to define Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because that's what he is. He writes books, which he plagiarizes from my material. He is not about a bottoms-up movement. He's about corralling people into legislators run by Democrats or the left wing or the right wing. But he never wants a bottoms-up movement. And I'll talk more about that, and we'll do a call-in if you want to ask more about this. But without having this broad understanding and this deep understanding, you will always get lost either in the shoulders or in the wings, okay? But you're essentially in the establishment wing, wings. So what we want to do today is I want to give you three reasons, John, why you need to brainwash yourself, de-brainwash yourself from the not-so-obvious establishment. Unless you understand the insidious nature, look, the establishment is easy. It's easy. Any fool can call out, you know, those, you know, the legitimate faces of power. But the reason working people like you and I and those who have been abused over many, many years are in this situation is because they haven't unbrainwashed themselves from the not so obvious establishment. And there are three reasons why we need to do this without compromise. And it's not about what you feel. You know, I just, on the drive over here, I got a call from somebody, and people, very nice people, they'll ask me like crazy questions. You know, like, you know, when Trump was in this video, he was making this sign. Doesn't that mean he's against the establishment? Or someone just said, you know, when Melania went to the White House, she did an exorcism to get rid of people, yet she met with the Pope. What's going on? Anyway, people waste a lot of their very, very precious brain cycles on very, very dumb questions. And when you ask dumb questions, you're going to get very stupid answers, and it's not going to really serve you. And the reason today we have the destruction of the First Amendment in the United States, for that matter, globally, whatever part of the country you are, we have the complete fusion of government and the establishment and big tech, which is what our lawsuit exposed historically, in a historic way. Second, what we know now is that the establishment works together to ensure that there's really no real science taking place. 99% of the scientists in major institutions are whores. They're prostitutes. Literally, that's probably the best way to describe them. So you don't have truth. You don't have freedom. And if you look at globally, the prevalence of all the health issues, we don't have health. So we don't have truth. We don't have freedom. We don't have health. What we do have is power, profit, and control. And all of this has been brought to you by the not-so-obvious establishment. That is why our movement will always be on the forefront in a very critical way. And this may bug certain people because you want to live in a freaking fairy tale. But that's not what we're about. We're about building a truly bottoms-up movement. So let me go to my slide set here that I put together, because I want to walk you through these slides to share with you the reasons, the three reasons, and John's going to make it also easy for our Instagram audience to see this. Let me bring this up. You can bring this over here, John. Or are you going to bring it over there? Oh, okay. Oh, you have it there. Oh, great. Okay. So we're going to talk about the three reasons why you must de-brainwash yourself from the not-so-obvious establishment. The acronym that I use, for some of you, if you have not seen this, I call it the NSOE, not-so-obvious establishment, if you want to take some notes on that. So the first reason is, let me just fix this. The bottom line is that they are the establishment, okay? The not-so-obvious establishment is the establishment. That's probably the most hardest thing for people to understand or appreciate, why we must be so uncompromising in exposing and annihilating these guys, okay? Because they are the establishment. So reason number one, okay, the not-so-obvious establishment is the establishment, okay? If you think for any reason that no matter how much you like these people or dislike them, whether you like Biden or not, or you like Trump or not, right, they are part of the establishment, okay? They're not working people. They have not struggled bottoms up. All right? They are the establishment. This may be hard to swallow, but the not-so-obvious establishment or the establishment, they're one and the same. All right? That's the first principle here. All right? Second principle. Let's go back to this. Is that the second principle here is that they were created to do theatrics. So you believe one side is fighting for you as they screw you even more. Let me repeat that. So they were created to do theatrics. So they create one side and another side. So you believe, oh my God, this guy's fighting for me. He just wrote this book, or this guy said this. Okay? And he said this, and you get caught in all this bullshit theatrics. So you start believing in the Q and not you. Okay, they want you to believe in Q, not you. Or believe in, you know, XYZ celebrity or some junk ass politician versus you believing in you. So the second reason that they were created, let me change this to number two, is that they were created so you literally believe that they are fighting for you. Okay? So you don't believe in yourself or You dissuade yourself from really understanding the reality of what's going on. So you actually believe that one of these characters in this movie script, which they've created, it's all theater, right, is fighting for you. Okay? So reason number two, they were created to do theatrics. So you believe one side is fighting for you as they screw you even more. And let's look at the video, sort of summarize the video I did yesterday. If you go look at it, all right, what I talked about yesterday was we did a whole analysis on Trump and Biden. Again, it doesn't matter if you like them. That's all great. You can be friends with them, go hang out with them, you know, but recognize that it's theater. But at the end of the day, over the last 12 months, Pfizer's revenue, which was dropping from $65 billion to $40 billion, which is almost $25 billion in revenue they lost in 10 years, in one quarter of this year, 2021, they made $25 billion in 3 months. And they made $40 billion in revenue in the whole year. So Pfizer's revenue went from a dropping $40 billion up to $80 billion, okay? Both wings of the establishment, both Biden and Trump, got money for their inauguration from Pfizer. And some people very stupidly who are still clinging on to the cult say, well, that's not a lot of money. Really? Well, if that's not a lot of money, my question is, why did they take it? Okay? If that's not a lot of money, why did Trump need it? Why did Biden need it? All right, so you have to stop rationalizing and be an abuse victim. All right? Both wings of the establishment played theatrics. One uses a carrot, the other uses a stick. You know, Tweedledee and Tweedledum. At the end of the day, what's happened over the last 12 to 16 months has been the destruction of working people's rights, the destruction of the First Amendment, the destruction of the Basic Bill of Rights, and more importantly, the destruction of people's health. As you can see it over and over, no one's even addressing the real health issue. We're all distracted not to talk about how you boost your immunity, how you create real public health, but to talk about the jab or no jab. That's where our attention has gone to. So going back to the second reason, that's what it is. Now, the third reason is a very interesting one, okay? You know, let me fix this again. Again, they exist, pronoun change, okay? So the other reason that they exist, the establishment exists, is because they exist to make sure that any activism that they want you to do is not real activism. It's about really corralling you to do activities that are really not about building a truly bottoms-up movement. And John's going to play a video to show you what a bottoms-up movement really looks like. But they exist to corral you into elections, okay, quote-unquote elections, which we know are selections, right? They own both sides. Or to fake, quote-unquote, protests. When the not-so-obvious establishment seeing people starting to rise up, you know what they do? They actually start conducting circus protests. Okay? As we talk about in our movement, when you look back at the civil rights movement, it was Robert Kennedy who, and the SNCC, with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, went and chose Martin Luther King. They ran the march on Washington, so they controlled. You see, it's called controlled opposition because they actually control the opposition. Okay? They define the bounds of the movement. And I'll share with you a couple more examples of this, but this is hard to appreciate unless you've gotten on the ground. But the bottom line is they exist to corral you into elections or to fake protests, where you typically they'll do a protest in front of legislators' offices or state houses or courts, right? For they truly fear, you know, for they fear a truly bottoms-up movement of militant workers united for truth, freedom, and health. Okay? They do not want working people uniting and not going and begging in front of legislators' houses. For example, in Australia, you saw the workers literally took to the streets of the highways. They almost burned down their union halls. I'm not saying we should go burn down union halls, but working people broke away from the liberal unions. And when people break away from the left wing and the right wing, and they literally take to the streets and they say, you know what, this is our movement, and in a very powerful, militant way, not going and doing a we shall overcome bullshit protest in front of some state house. And that's what the not so obvious establishment is getting ready to do now. They want people to protest in front of state houses. They don't want people to literally go to the streets, neighbor to neighbor, organizing people. This is a very, very significant difference. And unless we understand the significant difference, we're always going to be moved into one wing or the other wing. And as people's angers grow, the establishment in fact, uses the grips of the not-so-obvious establishment and its misleaders as controlled opposition to guide people always back to one wing of the establishment. Okay? I'm going to come back and explain this even further. We're going to go to a deeper level. But one of the things, John, can you have this scrolling, please? But one of the things we want people to understand is that I want people to go to truthfreedomhealth.com, and we need to build a bottoms-up movement. So the first important consciousness that needs to happen is people need to understand that we need to move ourselves away from either wing of the establishment, de-brainwashing ourselves from the not-so-obvious establishment, but more importantly, recognizing that you need to fight for you. As many of you know, we've waged a war. You know, I put a significant amount of my time into exposing that elections are selections. We exposed a war in a historic lawsuit exposing the censorship issue. We were the first ones to expose Fauci. Okay? So on the health issue, on the censorship front, on the freedom front, as well as on the truth front. Okay? Truth, freedom, and health. Long before all these opportunist, not-so-obvious establishment people came in who mislead people. And what I'm here to share with you now is one person like me, yes, I can be a very strong fighter and I can make certain gains, but it's time that you fight for you. But in order for you to fight for you, you need to start having fundamental scientific principles on how to do that. You need to understand the science of politics, meaning the science of how you fight. And that science comes from system science. And it's taken me 50 years to organize that into a curriculum. So that knowledge we have, which we never had, frankly, before in history, with all humility. The second thing is we've created an environment where you can start communicating among other people so you don't feel isolated, so you can start building a movement. And third, we've created tools where you can actually go on the ground and you can teach others. Real change is not going to come from us yelling and screaming at each other. It's going to come when we start educating our fellow humans, our other working people, to move away from what I call the dialectics of left and right, black and white, that we start educating them on the insidiousness nature of the not-so-obvious establishment. So what I want to do is I want to take a few phone calls. John, can you put up the phone call, please? So to discuss...
All right, I'm going to leave him there, but I think he's made his point. And I'm liking this guy up to a point. He's got some good things to say. I disagree with a couple of things that he says, but I think if I can get 80% of the way there with agreement, I think I'm probably worth sharing, because he's got some good systems theory stuff to share, some good systems analysis, I think. Right, let me see what else we've got. I'm going to pick another video. I think we'll go for another 15 or 20 minutes and then I'll close this down.
And then I'm going to play a couple of videos.
Then Elijah said to the people, I only am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men.
Want is not a word for us, Ignatz. God wants, we wish for. We must obey what God wants of us. I did. God wants us to live without power and lust. Two things that bring us to destroy other people and them to destroy us. And in return, he gives us knowledge, the ability to read and interpret. And he gives us family love.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't even know where to begin this day. Today's date is the 21st of November, 2022. It is 6:28 p.m. My name is Brendan O'Connell. If you don't know who I am, I'm on the run. Three warrants from my arrest.
Been watching mainstream documentaries talking about Israel. And I'm telling you, Bill Giraldi will have no problems naming Steve Levitch as a gangster, a case officer for Israeli intelligence. That's what he does. And when he runs back to Israel three times a year, he's up there talking about you and talking about how he's got everyone in the palm of his hand. You need to read my stuff instead of just kind of bringing up columns and nuts.
Australian citizen, I worked in Iran with government analysts, been to Lebanon, Malaysia, you name it, had quite an adventure. And of course, you have never heard of me, which would be interesting. Biggest hate speech trial in history. Israeli state came out against me and I instigated the full disclosure of Israeli intelligence activity, Telpiot program, Unit 8200, and on and on.
This is about SAS Campbell Barracks, Leon Wind, Variant. Timothy, you told me that Variant does your local and national, your local police intercept, an Israeli intelligence front.
Fuck you in the car.
And again, you've never heard of me. They have kept me well and truly hidden whilst promoting others, and we're going to talk about that. Today is a big one because there's so much to take in. I've been a little bit tardy and a little bit busy with other things. We need to go over the ridiculousness of this Kissinger and Associates group. We need to see Steve Bannon and Gawker, you see behind me, going after Murdoch and therefore Kissinger, and Peter Singer, the hedge fund who's pushing Ron DeSantis, which... You know, we've got the former Vice News journalist, totally mainstream, total little piece of garbage, Timcast IRL, Tim Pool with that piece of garbage. We Are Change, a money thief, and amongst many other things, like how about drug and heroin addict? And what happened to Mr. Wallace, the guy that started We Are Change? I don't know, Luke Radowski, would you like to tell us? We have so much to talk about in Kaiki and the FTX. Big deal, it collapsed. What a surprise. Do we have to talk about crypto? It's a scam started by bankers to get you into the system, which they always run and control. And no, you are not going to take on the banking cartels and have a free, where you just print your tokens out of thin air in your digital mind and just live free from the bank. Never going to happen. It's ridiculous. There are so many things coming home to roost. Ukraine, what's going on with Putin, who's a World Economic Forum Davos boy, who's done everything he's told, but somehow is going to rescue us from global homo, and a whole range of other issues, which are so absurd. It's beyond belief. The multipolar world order. Klaus Schwab is coming out to tell you all about it. And, of course, the continuing ongoing farce of Elon Musk, a billionaire globalist who hangs out with other billionaire globalists, who is apparently going to save you all from billionaire globalists. The absurdity of today is so bad, it makes me depressed. And I know so many of the old hands who started out in the 90s and early 2000s who watched this garbage unfold are just in shock. But this is the new operations. They started in 2008 and it's been going strong and they've managed to pay everyone off. We've got a whole host of things. Alex Jones is full retard now, talking openly of secession of the states. Andrew Torba, openly of secession. This is pure Kissinger and Associates breakup of the United States. It's treason writ large, right in everyone's face, and there is not a single soul with any form of audience that is going to tell you this. Not a soul. There is literally nobody with an audience who's going to point out the self-evident defecating elephant in your living room. All right, that's the intro. It's a little long. I hope you enjoyed the start from one of my favorite movies, Sunshine. Don't ever show it to a Hungarian fascist. They get very upset. Bela Kun, of course, the mass murder of Hungary in 1919, the Bolshevik, is not mentioned in that movie. But the movie itself is actually a very interesting movie. And, of course, if you like Ralph Fiennes, a great bevy of actors in that movie, Sunshine. What an interesting start. Nevermore app now, as we see the incitement, the building of Greater Israel, the wanting to move European and American Jews out of their self-indulgent comfort and over into the Federated States of Greater Israel before they collapse the United States and Europe into this. Man, there's so much going on. So much going on.
The media can only handle like one thing at the time. If you're giving them five things a day, right, three of them you can kind of get through.
The idea is they go into sensory overload.
Exactly. They do.
There's so much treason going on that I'm in bitter shock and disbelief myself.
Brendan. You mean Brendan? Yeah, Brendan. Oh, you know, you think he was head down. It's all politics, Daddy, you know that.
So much to talk about. Well, before we get into it, you know what we got to do. Let's meet the great shoe salesman from the back alleys of Krakow, Poland, Mr. Benjamin Milikowski, a.k.a. Benjamin Netanyahu. Let us attend.
Cyber, and cyber is a real domain of power. And cyber, is a real domain of power.
Okay, well, after that lengthy intro, and if you can tell, I'm actually a bit disturbed and in shock what I'm seeing unfold. Wait till you see if you don't already know about this. A lot of my patrons already know about this, but the stuff we've collected just on the utter treachery coming out of the Alex Jones, Steve Bannon. But before we get into that, and Jay Dyer talking with this Colonel McGregor, who's the biggest fraud to ever walk the earth, yeah, Atlantic Council. McGregor's Atlantic Council with Heinz Kissinger and General Jim Jones. We're going to go into all of that. My head spins just thinking about it, but let's do the best we can. Now, here's Steve Bannon doing something useful with Gorka, Sebastian Gorka, that piece of garbage. I don't know what to say. Steve is certainly a mixed bag, but what you're going to hear them do now is something very significant. There is a real war on. It ain't staged. And Ron DeSantis, after Kissinger got upset, and Rupert Murdoch, that billionaire who runs Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson works for a billionaire globalist, Rupert Murdoch, who's in bed with the master of the cull, the man who wants the UN One World Government openly, who wants to kill us all, Heinz Kissinger, and the Atlantic Council. And we're still sitting here confused. If you can't see the internet for what it is, a totally controlled, horse-pucky environment, they don't care about me and my 23,000 subscribers. I couldn't care less. They just laugh. That's, as Patrick Berge explained, it's Brennan. It's a beautiful compartmentalized, and there's just no very limited leaking of information.
They're using this against Trump.
They're using it however it benefits them.
Well, but I mean, the establishment, the main attack is against Trump. Mm-hmm.
Sure. If it benefits them to attack Trump, they will attack Trump. If it benefits them to use Trump to hurt their enemies, they will use Trump to hurt their enemies. It has nothing to
do with politics. It's all very sociopathic.
It's nothing to do with politics. It's all about power and profit. People got to get the politics out of their mind with this. Once you can accept that, it starts making sense.
When it comes to this type of propaganda and cyber warfare?
I would say probably General Jones. America, domestically. Israel, extremely powerful, right? But also directly tied to General Jones through Wikistrat and Joel Zemel, who I believe Wikistrat is actually WikiLeaks. I believe Psy Group is actually iSci, the name of our relational database. That's actually how we do
it. And why do they keep Assange in jail when it didn't come from the Russians? It probably did come from General Jones. That's the word I was told back during the campaign. And then they tried to blame Roger and I can tell you, Roger did not have these high-level connections, you think. He couldn't even get the time of day from Julian Assange. But General Jones, I know, was involved at those levels from what I've seen.
So those questions that you ask are all questions that I've been trying to get.
Remember, Trump's like, I love WikiLeaks, release it all. And then he leaves Assange there. I don't like that. He did the right thing, you know, getting Roger clemency. Why do you think he's not helped Julian Assange?
I don't know. These are all questions that I'm trying to get answers to, because I know all the people that were involved with the ShadowNet are all directly involved in that. General Jones and Michael Hayden are on the board of directors of Wikistrat. Wikistrat was directly connected, is owned by Joel Zemel, Psy Group, Wikistrat. They were both tied to the Cambridge Analytica scandal, where Facebook again got fined $1 billion and then turned around and partnered with the subcontractors to Cambridge Analytica to what? Restore election integrity worldwide, right? That these tools that we had pioneered to use against our adversaries had just been commercially sold politically throughout our country on both sides. I had no idea the depth of what's going on. Real quick, the vice president of Jones Group International, Jillian Turner, is a Fox News host. She was a Fox News host while she was vice president of Jones Group International. Jones Group International is owned by General Jones. Jones Group International owns the Shadow Net, right? And she's a Fox News host. Does she profit from that? I mean, people need to understand that they have put assets. I mean, this is what
I'm. By the way, I'm not defending General Jones or any of these people. No. What you're saying is on record, but I don't want to get tunnel vision here. You know, Google and Facebook and Twitter and all these other groups have their own similar systems. Mm-hmm. And so when they do partnerships, it's because they're all trying to get more data on the other one. Yeah. That's why, like, China and Huawei, mm-hmm. it's always scoop up more and more. Mm-hmm. So your perspective was from the military and General Jones. Who are the other big players, though?
You can go back to Google, right? We have a ShadowNet flyer, right? And which is a publicly disseminated ShadowNet.
And Google
flyer.
Was set up by the Pentagon.
Google's Irkut, which was basically shut down because in part by too many fake personas. Google's Irkut is literally, there's an active engagement as a screenshot on the ShadowNet flyer for Google's Irkut. Now, I would like to know, did Google know that they were doing that? And if they didn't know that they were doing
that? Of course they knew, but it's like Facebook was the CIA operation, and the day it went public, they shut it down and flipped it to Facebook. And that's Intutil.
I can't say, but I can say in 2018, Facebook partnered with the owner of the ShadowNet to restore election integrity worldwide. So, yeah, kind of fits, doesn't it?
And you're watching a vast pool of people being herded like cattle, just stampeding into these things after they set up. COVID was a big factor. They've scared the crap out of people, and they've created heroes. Real heroes like the Alex Joneses of this world. Do you understand how that works? And with data analytics, they can take immense risks, like with COVID, to really scare people into line and get that managerial class into line. And trying to explain this to people is an impossible task. And I had a dream. Let me tell you my dream before we get into Bannon. I've been extremely frustrated. I make pretty reasonable money and I can survive where I am. I can't buy a house, but I can live. I can buy a computer. I can save a few thousand US dollars to make sure I've got a plane ticket out of here with a couple of thousand dollars left over. I probably got more disposable income than you do. I'm depressed. It's just not stopping. I know there are good things going on in the background, but when you see Elon Musk being touted as a hero, when he's the brain chipping globalist transfer point, Kissinger and Associates, a transfer point out of NASA and over into the Israeli Space Agency. He's a technology transfer, just as the F-35 was nothing. The only reason the F-35 existed was as a technology transfer to make sure Russia and China got some technology, helmet-mounted sights, new multifunction displays, new electronic warfare systems, and, of course, the material science to make their special materials and special surface smoothing of stealth aircraft. That's the only reason the F-35 exists. It's a technology transfer.
I may ask Marilyn Lockheed, the leading woman's business executive in this country, according to many. And we buy billions and billions of dollars worth of that beautiful F-35. It's stealth. You cannot see it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Better be correct, right?
Absolutely.
Marilyn, please say a few words.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I would just say that this is a very important moment for our country in that we are addressing what is a critical area for the aerospace and defense industry, and that is our protecting our intellectual property. As has been expressed, that is a threat to us if we have that stolen from our companies, because that is the lifeblood of our companies. And so we very much welcome this action on the part of the Trump administration and the President of the United States. Thank you.
Because to keep the military-industrial complex circle of life, manufacture of high technology, and Cold War 2.0, that's what's going on. They're forming the multipolar world order, Cold War 2.0.
Presidential historian Thomas Bailey wrote in 1948, at the time when we were sort of setting off on a new war, the Cold War, he wrote, "Because the masses are notoriously short-sighted and generally cannot see danger until it's at their throats, our statesmen are forced to deceive them into an awareness of their own long-run interests. Deception of the people may in fact become increasingly necessary unless we're willing to give our leaders in Washington a freer hand."
That will justify taxpayer expenditure, keep everyone very busy under the War Powers Act so that they can build robots and drones and then kill us all with them. That's the plan. Round us up into the UN smart cities, the gulags, and then finish you off. And I warn you right now, if you allow this secession to keep going on, if you allow Alex Jones and the Roger Stones of this world, and the Tim Pools and the Jake Dyers and the Owen Schroers, who are talking openly, it's time to secede. This is pure, pure, pure Kissinger and associates. And if you'd have told me even 5-6 years ago they would get away with this, I would have laughed. They might try. No one's getting away with this. They are getting away with it. It's horrifying to watch it just happen the way it is. But let's get into something Steve Bannon said with Sebastian Gorka. Peter Singer is a giant hedge fund. Foundation Systems, George Kaiser, Tulsa, Oklahoma, bringing in the Unit 8200 via the Foundation Systems. What did Norman Dodd teach us?
And Mr. Gaither had sent for me when I found it convenient to be in New York, asked me to call upon him at his office, which I did. And on arrival, after a few amenities, Mr. Gaither said, "Mr. Dodd, we've asked you to come up here this today because we thought that possibly off the record you would tell us why the Congress is interested in the activities of foundations such as ourselves." And before I could think of how I would reply to that statement, Mr. Gaither then went on voluntarily and stated, he said, "Mr. Dodd, all of us that have a hand in the making of policies here have had experience either with the OSS during the war or the European Economic Administration after the war. We've had experience operating under directives, and these directives emanate and did emanate from the White House. Now we still operate under just such directives. Would you like to know what the substance of these directives is?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Gaither, I'd like very much to know." Whereupon he made this statement to me, namely, "Mr. Dodd, we here operate on similar, in response to similar directives, the substance of which is that we shall use our grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union." Well, parenthetically, Mr. Griffin, I nearly fell off the chair.
Central Banking Cartel, Roundtable Groups, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Royal Institute of International Affairs, Davos, Bilderberger, down into Foundation Systems, which are the front groups. They put up front people, and they then dispense money into the various little operations they have going, whether it's Black Lives Matter or Proud Boys or whatever.
But then a technologist emerged who went much further, and his ideas would become central to Putin's grip on power. He was called Vladislav Surkov. Surkov came originally from the theatre world, and those who have studied his career say that what he did was take avant-garde ideas from the theatre and bring them into the heart of politics. Surkov's aim was not just to manipulate people, but to go deeper and play with and undermine their very perception of the world, so they are never sure what is really happening. Surkov turned Russian politics into a bewildering, constantly changing piece of theatre. He used Kremlin money to sponsor all kinds of groups, from mass anti-fascist youth organisations to the very opposite, neo-Nazi skinheads. And liberal human rights groups who then attacked the government. Surkov even backed whole political parties that were opposed to President Putin. But the key thing was that Surkov then let it be known that this was what he was doing, which meant that no one was sure what was real or what was fake in modern Russia. As one journalist put it, it's a strategy of power that keeps any opposition constantly confused, a ceaseless shape-shifting that is unstoppable because it is indefinable. Meanwhile, real power was elsewhere, hidden away behind the stage, exercised without anyone seeing it.
whatever operations they have running, funding think tanks, Carnegie, Atlantic Council, Council on Foreign Relations, so on and so forth. That's the way the system works. And you see Peter Singer, a giant hedge fund, pushing good old Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is a fraud rat. He was a nobody in 2016, barely getting along. He didn't do a fantastic job with COVID. He just maintained a normal mental state and said, no, we're not shutting down our economy. And everyone went, oh, my God, he's a hero. He's a manufactured hero from the crisis. They put up the Ooga Booga virus, scared everyone to death, put the managerial class in line and created heroes. They're dividing the nation. It's a beautiful job. And then the UBI will be dispensed via the states, unlike Australia or England, where it's all federal. No matter where you go in Australia, you get unemployment benefits. I see now in America, it's done at the state level. So you have states which won't have a UBI in the south, and that's where all the industry is going. And they're probably going to manufacture a lovely earthquake once they shift Silicon Valley down into the south. Then they're going to put out in the states the UBI, and all the ne'er-do-wells and people who want to have free abortions and to trim their ball sacks and their beards will go into the north and their metrosexual abortion cafe latte areas. They will get the UBI. And you will break the country up under loose lines via the state system, foundation systems. When they're ready and they have enough and they're building and building and building the Federated States of Greater Israel, they are then going to collapse the United States completely, and all the fools that decide to secede, the robots and drones, will be coming for you. First, they will divide the country. Half of the country will be disarmed. They will then conglomerate all the armed citizens into one area. You can shake a fist at the libtards, make yourself feel better, convince yourself Nancy Pelosi is running the conspiracy with Hillary Clinton in the witchcraft bunker, and none of these people will hammer home to you the foundation systems via the roundtable groups, banking and financial system, City of London, UK, EU banking cartel. They won't say it. They won't mention it. At best, they'll say it for 10 seconds and move along and toss you a bone, and that's enough. And you mean to say in the year 2022, this basic information that all the old hands had well back in the late 1990s, the Bill Coopers, the Ezra Pounds, the Eustace Mullins of this world, the G. Edward Griffins, the Norman Dodds, the Myron Fagans, all of that information is gone. The Young Turks are here, and they're just here. They're bright. They're shiny. They got loads of cash. They got professional studios, and they've suckered in the vast majority of the population. They are now a stampeding herd, getting divided into their polar opposites. Andrew Torbama should be executed for treason. Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer, Jay Dyer, all of them, Colonel McGregor. I could list a couple of thousand probably in the United States who we need immediately to be executed lawfully under the Treason Act. To watch this unfold so easily is driving me insane. Let's now listen to Steve Bannon and Gawker say something very interesting about the real split between the Trumps of this world and the slick willy Mr. DeSantis. Let's listen to what he has to say. It's very interesting. Very interesting. We're also going to mention Trump saying he wants term limits and no one can lobby when they get out of power. If it's just not empty dog whistle rhetoric, then that could be very interesting. Let's hear what they have to say.
Let me jump in here. Your analysis is sound, but let me just push back on one thing. President Trump, at the end of his speech, declared war on the establishment in a way he's never done before. When you stand up as a former president who can lead another administration to victory, and you say, I'm going to amend the U.S. Constitution, I'm going to propose an amendment that there are term limits in Congress and that all congressmen and women and senators will be barred for life from lobbying. At that point, Steve, this man must be destroyed by the establishment. He must be utterly destroyed because he has gone after the only thing that matters to them, money and power. And the fact that we've had four people, four members of Congress in the last 3 days actually endorse that declaration of his campaign. Do we have the people with the spine to follow through? I love Matt Gaetz. Troy Nels has endorsed him. Elise Stefanik has endorsed him. But can we go after the you had one mission, Steve, and it's to take down the administrative state. Can we do it with four people plus President Trump?
No, you can't. Here's how you got to do it. Victory begets victory. Because I keep saying, I gave it the talk last night to the audience and then this morning. this is not, and Trump will get more allies over time as victory begets victory. This is not 15 and 16, although he's running as an outsider. This is going to be 10 times harder, 20 times harder.
Yeah.
This is Trump versus the money. This is Trump versus the power. This is.
Now listen up. Listen up. This is good.
Trump versus the system. This is Trump versus the establishment. This is the outsider versus the insiders. This is Trump versus the man. Okay? Yeah. And that's personified or manifest.
Who's the man, Steve? Tell us who the man is. He's about to say Rothschild? No, he's not going to say Rothschild, of course. See, this is where it gets down to. You've got to say you've had enough. I'm tired of bones. I just want it every day. I want it every day. I don't want to hear about Pelosi. I don't want to hear about all these little children who run around playing politicians. I want to hear about Rothschild, City of London, Chatham House, Royal Institute of International Affairs. I want to hear about Davos and Bilderberger, World Economic Forum. I want to hear about the multipolar world order. I want it laid out exactly as we lay it out. You want to hear about technology transfer and industrial espionage via Israel, which has penetrated the United States and opened all the doors for China. You want to hear about banking cartels. You want to hear about the foundation systems. You want to hear about the think tanks. You want to hear Norman Dodd. You want to hear Myron Fagan. You want to hear those names mentioned. And yeah, and I guess a lot of you who are watching are just saying, oh, that's never going to happen. If you don't get angry and focused, kiss your grandchildren goodbye. Let's hear this bit. Let's hear this bit.
Fested in Ken Griffin, in Paul Tudor Jones, Steve Schwarzman, all the billionaires, plus Rupert Murdoch. That's what Trump's...
Schwarzman, of course, is BlackRock and all the rest. So he's named some big players there, but it's not enough.
Yeah, it's not about DeSantis or Youngkin. They're interchangeable vessels, right? They will find a vessel. They will find their vessel, right? That is what he has to do. And only Trump can do this. And quite frankly, he doesn't even need allies. He doesn't. It's great to Stefanik and these people. I think it's great that people are positive and say, yes, I support him. But this is so fundamental and so raw. This is Trump versus them. And this is Trump saying,
so hang on. You nailed it, Steve.
We're going to
go ahead. Your strategic analysis is 100%. Do we need him? Because you're the former chief strategist. Do we need him to move the turret, to move the targeting radical from the front men, the go-betweens, the front organizations?
Sounds good, Sebastian Gorka, but you're still not punching high enough, buddy. Punch up.
And actually say, yeah. Guys, do you know who's – it's Murdoch, it's Singer. Does he need to have that narrative? Yes. Because if he does, he needs to start now.
I think –
imagine if he just named Peter Singer, Murdoch, Kissinger, City of London. Bannon's done it before. I've never seen anyone else do it at his level. He's done it before. He went after Kissinger for 3 solid months. This is why I gave him the time of day, particularly with his focus on local councils, precinct districts, school boards. But he's just so rotten and dirty, but it doesn't matter. It's all you got. Bannon's all you got. Trump's all you got. If you want to withdraw from the fight and poo-poo everyone, you're a gutless coward. We need to get in there. And let me tell you, America, if I was in America, I had citizenship, I would be down at every rally. I would be fundraising. I would have a freaking bus. We would be filming constantly. We would have flyers, banners, trailers, you name it, all organized. No one appears to be capable of doing anything, which utterly astounds me. When you come from my era, who ran in the early 2000s, late 1990s, and by 2008, 9, and 10, people were out every day doing stunts on the street, and you don't see anyone. It's just IIA crisis actors getting well paid to just keep the issues very contained. Now, they've come pretty close here, admittedly. Gorka, naming Murdoch. You're one step down from Heinz Kissinger, one step down from City of London, basically. Let's quickly finish this. So it's not all bad news, but I've got some information afterwards which just doesn't add up to me.
I think, well... we'll have to give a couple of days and we'll see. I say for Donald Trump, who's a puncher, never punch down. When you're punching DeSantis and Youngkin, you're punching down. Punch equal. These guys are your peers or they want to be your peers. They're jealous that you're the president and they're not. Punch Paul Singer. Punch Ken Griffin. Punch Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch's punching you every day in the New York Post, our beloved paper. Punch back. Seb, tell us about...
All right. Think about what he's just said, and then I'm going to show you some background to what's been going on, which will blow your mind. There's Bannon, who at his level is doing amazing stuff. I know how dirty Bannon is. He doesn't talk to Netanyahu anymore, hates his guts. You're going to have to get your hands dirty and get down there. Makes sense. If I have to explain it to you, you're probably a lost cause anyway. Well, you're just a moron who wants to analyze my hand signals as if you're... Because that's like a Pharisee. You don't want to do a hard day's work. So what you do is you pretend you're very valuable and you've got very important knowledge because you know all the hand signals and you read Codex of Magica by text Mars one day. And these morons, I just get rid of them. Immediately cull them off my YouTube channel. You've got to start getting your hands dirty. I know damn well. I know more about Steve Bannon than you. I promise you. I know exactly who he used to hang out with. At least it was the Sicilian mafia. Come on, good old fashioned, good old. Oh, another hand signal. The good old fashioned Italian mafia. Give him credit. Come on now. I know how dirty he is. Goldman Sachs and all the uptake. He was also into NFTs before anyone, crypto before anyone. There's a big background to these people. But you've got to keep pushing forward with what you have. Get your hands dirty. Get the tools out of the toolbox. You're in a jar. You've got to dig your way out. No, you don't go, ooh, look at that screwdriver. I'm not using it. It's all dirty and puffy. You are just a sad, pathetic moron and you should die personally. I just hope so. You fall down some stairs. At least get off my YouTube. Some of the comments, they make me depressed. It's not, no one's there from the Mossad putting those comments in. These are just morons that we managed to mess it up ourselves because we have people that haven't heard. As people said, Brendan, until it hurts, it's there will be no focus. It's got to hurt. It's got to really hurt. Like, people are got to be in fear for their lives and fear for their children. And finally, but I fear by then it will be too late. I'll be too late. But that is very positive news, what you just heard there. They're punching up Murdoch. But I would lift up, yeah, punch up to Murdoch, Peter Singer, Heinz Kissinger, Atlantic Council, Carnegie. Imagine if he went up the chain and said, this very rhetoric, why is it so hard to believe that Steve Bannon's in cave? He's talked about City of London, said Rothschild before in 2020, then he stopped. He was arrested and stopped. It's just time now. It's time. These things are not handled quietly. You must demand of these people that they have to up the rhetoric. You don't get satisfied. And trust me, if you know your politics, that's a pretty big deal what they just did then. It's everything we've been talking about. But it's just not enough, particularly when you take into account what's going on. This is from National Voice, a matter of spiritual and political necessity. The links are below. That is a InfoWars former editor who's done one. It's very well done, and he makes the case for secession. Time to secede peacefully. That's pure Heinz Kissinger, Kissinger and Associates, Atlantic Council.
The Texas Nationalist Movement, or TXIT, seeks to go a step further than Greater Idaho. Spearheaded by Daniel Miller, the movement wants to separate Texas from the federal government and reestablish the state as the independent republic it once was. He poses a question that should make any frustrated, freedom-loving Texan think. If you were an independent, self-governing nation, would you vote to join the Union right now? If you wouldn't vote to join, then why would you stay? Texas is a strong candidate to pull off secession and prosper on the other side. The state already pays more into the federal system than it receives, despite what the snarky columnists may say. Should TXIT come to pass, pressing issues like border security could finally be addressed without bureaucratic gridlock and moralist condemnation. TXIT seeks to put the question of secession to a statewide referendum, fully adhering to the principle that such a hefty decision should be fueled by the will of the people. Will the federal government allow the will of the people to manifest calmly and peacefully? Or will they block the exit door like an abusive lover, fearing the loss of their precious punching bag? Time will tell whether these movements are successful, but here's the final point. Separation does not have to be violent. It can and should end amicably.
Should Texas secede? That is good old Owen Schroyer. Should be executed for treason. Link is below. Should Texas secede? Going on again, he's even talking about, well, why don't we just team up with with Mexico then? Why not? It's so blatantly planting the seed again. He's best friends with who? Dr. Steve Pachenik, who was Kissinger's right-hand man. This is pure Atlantic Council CFR stuff here. Pure. Alex Jones is a treacherous traitor of the highest order, but he's a hero because he saved you from COVID. You get that.
Texas could vote to secede from the United States in 2023 as GOP pushes referendum. You know, this is not something I would have ever thought I'd be behind before, and I'm maybe not sure I am now, but I'm actually considering this as maybe a solution. I mean, what can I do to get rid of Democrats in my life? What can I do to get rid of the federal government? What can I do to get rid of big government? I don't want Texas to secede, but if that's the solution, if that's going to make it more prosperous for my life in Texas, then yeah, I guess I'll probably support that. So that's going to be a developing story. Oh, and so again, if Texas secedes, are we going to have a border again? Are we going to be allowed to protect our border? Maybe. Maybe we will no longer have an invasion if Texas secedes and we can protect our border that's wide open right now. But see, the Mexican president is not a big fan of Biden. He bails on meetings with Biden. He bails on these big consortiums that the Biden administration tries to organize. Mexican president doesn't attend any of it because he's sick of Biden too. Mexican president to meet with Joe Biden and propose Western Hemisphere Union just like the EU. And so that's pretty much where the Mexican president is at now. He said, look, we tried to solve this border crisis that affects our country too, and we were working with Trump to do it. Now Biden's in there, and he's just giving us the middle finger, so we're not going to work with Biden. And we really don't have a border at all, so why wouldn't we just have an EU-type situation? Why wouldn't we just have a situation where we just dissolve the border because it pretty much is dissolved already? So that's his solution to it. Because what is he going to do? He can't protect the U.S. border. Either the U.S. protects its border or it doesn't, and they're not. So he's looking for other solutions, and to make a Western Hemisphere Union like the EU is the solution he's proposing.
This is another fascinating one. Mike Adams. These are all in with Dr. Group, and that new...
Okay, I'm going to stop him there. That's Brendan O'Connell from his YouTube channel. Brendan O'Connell III, I think he takes it as. So his videos are good, and he posts fairly regularly. It's usually one a week. And I like the way that he does what he does. So I use his material on the radio show, and I'm going to start posting more on this podcast as well. So I shall be back tomorrow. I'm going to just stick with doing video style podcasts. I'll play videos for a while just to get back in the swing of it, because I've been neglecting this one a little bit. So just to get back in the swing of it over Christmas, I'll be posting lots of material, but it'll be me playing videos basically. Same thing I did last year, and hopefully I can get a bit of an audience together, and I can spread some good material around the internet a little bit. All right, thanks for listening, and I'll be back again tomorrow.